Well, I'm a desert child from a border town where they set you up just to knock you
down. Hello, and welcome back to the How I Got That Way podcast. I am your host, Brandon Doble. This week, I'm doing another in my series of Black in America, and I'll be talking to my good friend, Tarak Uday. Tarak is a super interesting cat. He hosts a web show called Awaken Within Us, where he talks about all sorts of metaphysical things, how to meditate, why things are going on in your life. It's actually really interesting. I really like it, and I really like Tarak. So I'm going to be talking to him today about what's going on in the world, what he's doing, how he got there, and all that stuff. Hope you enjoy the show. Hey, Tarak, how's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
So, little background story. Tarak and I met at a poker game in Louisville, Kentucky. And he came in, this big, burly dude with this Egyptian name, just talking smack. you know, made fun of me straight out of the gate. I was like, oh, you know, okay, this is my kind of guy. I definitely like that type of person. And you and I became buddies just because, I don't know, we played poker together. But the reason I wanted to call you or talk to you today is I've been doing this series called Black in America. I felt very strongly after the George Floyd thing came down, maybe call it white guilt, call whatever you want. But I felt like there were voices that weren't being heard. There was lots of noise. But so I started with a good friend of mine, a fraternity brother of mine. And I was just like, I was just checking in with him. Hey, how's it going? You know, what's this like for you? And I was amazed at what I heard from him. And it kind of opened Pandora's box for me. And I've been recording with some pretty amazing people on this podcast who've sort of opened my eyes up to things that I was completely unaware of.
Yeah.
White privilege, you know, white fragility. The book that's out right now is spot on about a lot of things. I don't cry when I talk about race, but I can definitely see myself getting defensive. So, but I don't cry a lot anyway. So maybe that says something about me. But anyway, so how you been through all this?
I've been good through all this. You know, for me, it's not anything different. You know, for a lot of us who are aware of prior to technology and cell phones and cameras being everywhere, you know, these issues aren't anything new. You know, these cases aren't anything new. You know, so you know, I've been pretty much the same as I've always been.
Well, and what I mean by that too is every guest I've had has said the same exact thing about, you know, it's just that now all of a sudden people are seeing it. This is, Black people have known about this, or people of color have known about this forever. This is not new at all. And that if anything that's come out of these shows that I hope my audience has gotten is that this is not new. This is just new. Yeah. This is not a Black or brown people problem. This is a white people problem. So let's start at the beginning a little bit, because I know you're pretty driven. You've done some really cool things. If people get on your Facebook page, they can see some of the stuff you've done. But so you're born in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes. University of Cincinnati.
Really? So how did your family end up in Cincinnati? Why Cincinnati?
Well, my mother's side, I know my grandfather was in the military in the Air Force, and he met my grandmother in Colorado in the military, and then they moved back this way because he's old Corbin, Kentucky. And then on my father's side, I know my grandmother is from Alabama. I got a lot of Freeman family down in Alabama. And my grandfather, I'm pretty sure, I don't know how they got to Cincinnati, but that part of my family has been in Cincinnati for a long, long time.
Okay. And so what was it like growing up in Cincinnati? I like Cincinnati, the Queen City. I think it's a cool town. It doesn't get a lot of rep. And a lot of people that aren't from there don't know a lot about it. But it's a beautiful city right on the river. Got a lot of cool hills and stuff going on. What was it like growing up there?
I liked it. I mean, I loved it. Honestly, I spent like the majority of my childhood there. But then I moved to Colorado. I moved to Indiana. I moved to Columbus. Why? I mean, I went to I don't know. mostly just whatever relative we could live with.
Oh, were you moving around with your family quite a bit?
Yeah, I went to like 15 different schools before I graduated.
You're kidding.
I've been to all white schools, all Black schools, all Hispanic schools, public schools, homeschool.
Let's stop on that for just 1 second. All right. Yeah. So your kid growing up, are your parents together when you're growing up? And you don't have to, you can be as personal in this interview as you want, whatever you're not coming. I should have said that at the beginning, but whatever you want to talk about, we could talk about. But I find it's really good when people want to just be fresh with what's really going on. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought this was a podcast, not a therapy session.
People get done and they're like, hey, dude, I felt like I just had therapy. That was great. So your parents are together when you're a kid or what?
Yeah, for the most part. And then at 8, my parents separated. And then that's when I left out of Cincinnati and went to Columbus. And then we came back to Cincinnati, then went to Colorado and Indiana, then back to Cincinnati.
And that was all with your mom?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you have any siblings?
Yeah, there's 9 of us total.
What? Yeah. You're kidding me.
Yeah.
So where do you – so are they all from your mom?
No. I only grew up with 3 of my sisters. I'm kind of in the middle upper echelon of sibling rankings. But of like 4 step-siblings, 4 half-siblings, and a full sibling. Yeah.
Okay. So you got your parents were with different people, different kids came out of those unions, and you're one of those 9. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar. It sounds like my life. So you're with your mom, and so would you say primarily you're with your mom and your 3 sisters traveling around? Like you said, you went to all those different schools.
Yeah. You know, we'd go to one school, live in one place for about a year or so. Lease run up and we moved to somewhere else.
Really?
Moved to a whole nother city or a whole nother neighborhood.
What was that like for you?
Relative in another state. I don't know. That was life. For me, that was life ever since I was a kid. You know, even when my parents were together, you know, I went to kindergarten here. I went to first grade here. I went to second and third grade here. You know, so.
Was that hard for you to make and maintain friendships doing that way?
I mean, well, like you said, from our very first poker meeting, you know, when you clean me out.
That is true. Hey, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and again, Tarak.
Well, that was like the first 4 times. I remember the second time we played, the very first hand you walked in on, you cleaned me out again.
I do my best.
But I mean, you know, we became friends, you know, right away. And I think that that's one thing that it afforded me is, you know, I was always the new kid, you know, so I had to build bonds quickly because in my mind, they're not going to be around for long because I'm going to have to do it all over again in another year or so. So wow. I just got really good at getting to know people and creating strong connections really quickly.
Well, so as an adult, do you see the positives and negatives in that, or is it just all positives?
Oh, I mean, I see the, you know, that there's, I don't really see it as negatives. I just see differences, you know, like for some people who they've lived in one house their whole life. And from the day they were born till the day they moved out, they lived in the same house that their parents lived in. And they have a lot of roots in those communities. And so there is a difference there. But, you know, at the same time, there's a benefit in that, and there's a benefit in what I experience. And, you know, from my understanding, this is just what I chose to experience for this lifetime. You know,
so uh-huh.
I don't really see like I missed out on anything, you know, because it would have afforded a whole different experience in life.
Yeah. Are you close with your siblings now?
Yeah. We're real close. You know, I talk to them a lot. You know, I mean, as far as like frequency, you know, in adulthood, you kind of get caught up in life. But, you know, whenever we do catch up, it's always, you know, just the day, like the last day we left off. Able to come to them with deep issues. They can come to me with deep issues.
And are they in the Louisville, Cincinnati area?
No, I'm the only one in Louisville. My little sister is in the Cincinnati area. My older sister's out in Baltimore, her family and things. So we're kind of all spread out. I don't have any family here in Louisville. So I don't know what's keeping me here.
Well, so let's go and talk a little bit about as you're growing up, what kind of, I mean, I think of you as just a super easygoing, happy-go-lucky guy. And that's what you present. I think you said it. That's how you know you got to step in. You're the new kid. You don't want to come in and be like hitting people over the head with a hammer. You got a sharp wit. You're funny. You know, you got a lot going for yourself. What was, as a kid growing up, what would, if someone saw you, they walked in, you're in this classroom, are you the same kid growing up as you are now as an adult? I don't mean like you weren't, you're more mature now, but was it kind of the same personality traits?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, you know, like one reason why me and you click so well, I think, is because, you know, you're a very charismatic and funny guy. And I am as well, you know, we kind of feed off each other and make jokes and keep joking and everyone's laughing, you know, and it creates a
oh no, happy, Tarak, they're not laughing, bro. They're in Louisville. They're not laughing. They don't get the joke, but that's all right. That's all right. I did. I mean, in all seriousness, I found very few guys like you in that town for whatever reason. And nice people. Don't get me wrong. I love Louisville. It's a great town, great people, but and maybe I just wasn't there long enough, but I had a hard time finding people with the kind of sense of humor you have and the kind of sense of humor I have, where you can just sort of like riff on each other. There was a lot of that. Like, what do you mean by that? You're like, I don't mean anything. We're just playing. And so I found that to be a really interesting cultural dynamic that I was not prepared for. And luckily I met a few guys like you that I could hang out with that wasn't that rough. And I think as people got to know me, they got to know that I was joking, but it wasn't an easy entry. Let me just say that. So, but back to you. So you go to high school in Cincinnati, you go to high school in Colorado. Where do you go to high school?
I started out high school in Colorado. I went to two schools there. Both were like primarily Hispanic schools. And then I moved to Indiana. So my freshman year, I went two schools freshman year in Colorado. My class alone, my freshman class at the last school had 2,500 kids in the class. And then I moved to Rising Sun, Indiana, where I made the 311th kid in the whole school. And it was a very big shock to me.
How many students of color were at the school in Indiana?
I think I was the second. I doubled the population, so they were excited. They had a parade every
day. They were like, we're gonna call this Tarak. Hey, before I forget to ask this question, I love your name. I have a friend out west named Tarak who was Egyptian.
Really?
Yeah, and you're the only other one I've ever met. So, and obviously I'm not in Egypt, but where did the name come from?
Well, it originates from Apache. I have a Apache on my grandmother's side. And it's actually an ancient name. It's Apache, Sanskrit, Aramaic, Hebrew. So it's a pretty ancient name, but mostly it's mostly prominent in like the Middle East, like you were saying. But it's also Apache and Cherokee. I had a personal experience, a spiritual experience about 10 years ago of knowing myself beyond my body, beyond my soul, beyond my spirit. And so I just want to give a name to help me relate to that identity. Because, you know, this body, Terrence Samuel Bowen II, is going to rise up and die away. And that essence of myself is going to remain. So I just...
Okay, we're going to the metaphysical, bro. We're going there, trust me.
Yeah,
but I want to wait. So you gave yourself that name?
Yeah, yeah.
You were not... When you were a kid growing up, what was your birth name then?
Little Terry.
So Terry, your birth name was Terry Uday?
Yeah, Terrence Samuel Bowen II. I was named after my father.
Oh, my goodness. So Tarak Uday is your name you chose for yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
That is crazy. I love that. So wait a second. Did you have everything legally changed?
Yeah, as of last year. Yeah, I did.
Oh, we got to dig into that for sure. But I want to, I really mean that. I mean, I just love that. I mean, I think that it's funny. I think, you know, we named my daughter Maple, and that's, you know, it's one of these hippie names. But a lot of people are like, oh, man, you guys. And I'm like, no, man, I named her that because I met this lady who had named her daughter Maple, who I loved. I was a teacher. Yeah. She was this great kid. And and I asked her how she came up with it. She goes, it's really simple. I grew up on Maple Street, and I didn't live near my family, and I wanted to remember them. And that's why I named. And I was like, man, I love that idea of naming.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But the reason I say that is because at some point in Maple's life, she might say, I don't really like that. It's too weird, whatever it is. And my wife and I have talked about it that, you know, if she wants to change her name to like her little middle name or whatever, we're not going to have I mean, I would be sad because I love the name. It's her. but yeah. I think names are important, and I think they say a lot about the person, and they and there's power in naming. So I think that's super cool that you did that. All right, but I want to pause that for a second because I want to get to I want to get to how you got to that. All right, so So you grow up, you graduate from school in Indiana, or did you move again?
I moved again just before, like in the middle of my senior year, and which is probably tough for a lot of people who might do that. But one, I've already moved around a lot, and two, this was the only time I actually went back to a school I had been to. So I went back to, so I moved to Cincinnati, and went to a school that I went to in eighth grade. So I knew a lot of the people in my graduating class. Like I knew probably half of the graduating class at that school. So it wasn't too bad. And actually it was kind of fun because I got to reunite with a bunch of old friends, and, you know, I'm still friends with some of them now today, which is amazing. Love it. I love it. So yeah, I did move again, back to Cincinnati, and then mostly stayed in Cincinnati, really actually completely stayed in Cincinnati from that point until about 7 years ago when I moved down here to Louisville.
So, what brought you to Louisville?
Metaphysics.
So wait a second, you moved from Louisville to, or from Cincinnati to Louisville to teach at the School of Metaphysics. So let's back up then before you do that, because I want to talk.
How
you graduated from high school? What do you do with yourself?
Well, I had a track scholarship and a dean scholarship to go to the University of Cincinnati, but because of the way I was raised, I never missed a day of school, and I just wanted a break. So I was going to take a semester off, and then realized that taking a semester off, you lose those scholarships. And so the semester turned into a year. A year turned into, I don't know when I'll go back. And really, that's kind of how I actually ended up getting back into metaphysics, because about 25, 26, I went back to UC and started taking classes. But as you know, the classes you really want to take, you got to take all these prerequisites and things.
Right.
It was just like, read this book and write a paper, read this book and take a test. And my main purpose for wanting to go back was just to get back to learning again, you know, because I had spent like the last 8 years just, you know, living life, doing whatever. I just want to get back to learning again. So I was like, you know what? I can read these books on my own without having to validate to somebody that I read it by writing a paper or taking a test. So I just looked at the classes that I wanted to take, went to the school's bookstore and bought those books. And then stopped going to classes. And then,
You're kidding.
No. And then that led, because it was more like philosophical type classes. And it was like the most advanced ones that I grabbed the books. But then as I was reading them, I was like, this is more just like people's thoughts on what things might be, you know? And that's not really what I was looking for. So then.
Have you always had that kind of spiritual edge, that desire to sort of understand yourself and the unknown?
Yeah, I mean, looking back at it, it was always there, but I wasn't always in tune with it from probably like 14 and 15 to like 24, 25.
Okay, so was there a precipitating event? Was there a precipitating event that said, I want to understand, you know, because if you look at your website, if you look at what's going on, dude, you subscribe to some stuff that like my parents did back in the 60s growing up on a commune in Northern California, right? So it's some heavy duty metaphysics. So was there an event, or was it just a slow progression?
Well, for me, it was so at the time when I did go back to UC, I was going to school and I was working two jobs, and which it wasn't uncommon for me. And one day, there was finally a day where I didn't have to go to either job, and I didn't have to take a class. And that was like the first time a day like that happened in like 3 months. And so I just woke up and had all these thoughts of all these things I was going to do, all these tasks I was going to accomplish. I was going to go play basketball for a couple hours. I was excited for the day. Then next thing I know, it's getting dark outside and I've hardly left my couch. And I realized that it was because I just didn't have the energy really for it. And so I called up my dad because he used to teach me Tai Chi, Judo when I was a child. And so I started asking him about energy. And like just asking questions on where I can find out more about like your inner energy and cultivating more energy so that I can have more energy to want to do things. And he just told me to like look into Qigong and go from there, see what I find. And so I get up and sit on my computer.
How did he get into that?
How he got into it, I don't know. Ever since I was a kid, I mean, he used to teach me how to meditate when I was like four. I could probably meditate before I could talk.
But, well, so was he, but he wasn't around after you were like eight that much, right? Or was he?
Yeah, yeah. No, he wasn't around too, because we moved to a whole different city right after they separated. So we talked on the phone a lot. You know, he really helped continue to cultivate that like deep thinking and more being stimulated intellectually throughout my childhood, mostly through phone conversations and things. He was a very deep person as well.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I mean, it didn't really cultivate further on, but, you know, I was lucid dreaming as a kid. I would like a lot of people talk about dreams. They would wake up and, oh, I want to go back into that dream. I don't want to wake up and I just want to keep dreaming that dream. And I never really had that experience because as a kid, I understood that I can just go back into that dream tonight when I go back to sleep later. And so I would just get up, go throughout the day, and then go back to bed and be like, oh, yeah, I can continue that dream now. Just jump right back into the dream and start dreaming. So stuff like that and meditating as a kid and stuff was all pretty prevalent throughout my life.
And you wrote a book about dreams. What do you mean by lucid dreaming?
Just being awake and aware that you're in a dream. So like, you know, if you're dreaming and stuff's going on and then all of a sudden you're fully conscious that you're actually in a dream. And then at that point, you can actually do whatever you want, really to the limits that your mind is capable of doing those things. Like flying, for instance. Flying represents mental freedom, being free of the things, the stresses in life that normally weigh you down. So however good you are at letting those things go and being free of that in the recent days, that's how well, if you become lucid, you'll actually be able to fly. Because, you know, sometimes I'll be lucid and I can take off flying like Superman. Other times I'm going real slow or can only like jump 300 feet or something. So I'm not too good. So it just depends on how well I'm able to let those things go throughout the day.
Well, it's funny because I'm a big believer in dreams. I haven't spent that much time sort of studying or reflecting. I know you spent a ton of time on it, but I have this recurring dream where I'm literally being chased by something. And yeah. Where I think a lot of people freak out, like it's like whatever it is, monster, person, whatever. It's usually doesn't really have much it's just a thing. And yeah. I always turn around at the end of the dream and start fighting it. And literally punching this thing. Like it's the strangest thing. I've told people, they're like, what? I just keep running. I don't know what that means.
I just keep running. Yeah, most people.
No, but I mean, literally in my dream, I am physically fighting this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like I kind of wake up fighting this thing. And it's, I don't know what that means. I suppose it means wrestling with something or, you know, having, you know, kind of trying to figure something out. But so I'm a big believer in and I always wake up kind of thinking about that. So is that kind of what your dream work has been about? Sort of trying to
understand? Yeah, help. Well, yeah, trying to help other people to understand themselves. Because like when I first started understanding dreams, learning to interpret dreams, you know, I'm not the guy. You know, I was a very stubborn, bullheaded person, confrontational. And if you kind of confronted me with things, I would get angry real quick. But a lot of times whenever that would happen, because it was rare, but whenever it would happen, you know, and get into a fight or something, I would just always place the blame on the other person. Like, I'm not an angry person. I'm more of a happy go lucky kind of guy. They made me that way. So I literally wasn't trying to face that part of myself that really was there. But it would only come up every once in a while. And so at those times, I would have a dream of running from something or something trying to kill me. And I'm just keep on running from it because I'm not facing it. And then as I got into dream work, I was also getting into meditation and things. And through the meditation and concentration practices, I began to become aware that that really was a part of myself. And I had to change that. And so then I started having dreams where I would be running and running and then turn around and face what was chasing me. And then start fighting it until ultimately I change that part of myself and I'm no longer like that. You know, if somebody comes and confronts me now and, oh, you're a B word or something, I might have fought them before, but now I just laugh because I really know myself, you know. So it's because I'm not like that anymore. I've changed that.
And how did you really do that?
Do a lot of meditation and self-awareness, you know, because a lot of in those experiences, it was more reacting to what was going on in my environment. I wasn't making conscious choices of how I was going to react to it. It was just however I was programmed, I would just respond in that way. But now I'm becoming more aware of my thoughts and I'm able to choose which thoughts I want to entertain to where if that situation happened now, I might still have that initial reaction like, oh, I'm going to have to show this guy if he's talking, you know, talking mess to me, I'm going to have to show him that I'm not that type of person you can just talk like that to. So that thought may come in at first, but I'm not automatically going to react to it. I'm going to assess it and then realize, wait a second, that's probably not the best way to respond right now. And then make more of a conscious choice on how I'm going to respond to this situation versus being at the mercy of my initial thoughts and reactions.
Huh, I like that.
Yeah, it took a lot of concentration exercise. I mean, I would practice concentration exercise every day for like 10 minutes, meditate every day for like 30 minutes. Then it grew to like concentration exercise for 30 minutes, meditation exercise for 45 minutes, you know, all type of other exercises. I mean, I was doing spiritual disciplines up to like 4 hours a day at one point.
I follow the spiritual disciplines, but not 4 hours a day for sure.
Yeah.
So let's go back. You were talking about the fact that you bought these. I interrupted you because you were talking about the.
No, you're fine.
You went and bought these philosophy books at University of Cincinnati. You weren't taking the class. You were getting caught up in like reading this stuff. So you didn't really want to go to school. You were more interested in figuring this out. So how does it progress from? Right. No, I know. I mean, I see it in everything you do. But so where does it go from there? You buy these books. When do you really get into into it deep?
Okay. Well, when I get into it. Okay. So when I had that experience of not having any energy and called my dad, he told me about Qigong. Within an hour, I'm finding out about chakras and energy chakras. And then like 3 months later, I'm no longer going to classes. I meet this girl randomly and we hang out twice. And on the second time, she hands me a book about chakras, and it talks about hand chakras, and you can open up your hand chakras and use those for healing. And at that time, for the previous year, I had this thing growing on the back of my head. It's like a tumor or something growing on the back of my head. And it was getting bigger and bigger. It was about the size of a dime at this point. And then, so that was for the previous year at this point. Also, for the previous 2 years, I had like serious heart issues. Like 2 years prior to that, I just had an experience on the first day of like my heart was beating normal. And then all of a sudden it felt like if you have one of those big sponges, just wring it out all the way. Like that's literally what my heart felt like. Wow. And then all of a sudden it was like, boom, started pumping again. And then I would have that experience like once a month and then once every 2 weeks. And then once, ultimately by the 2 year point, it would happen at least once a day to where like, you know, if we're sitting there playing poker, I'd sit there and stop for a second. And everybody's still hanging out, but I'm sitting here having this internal experience, wondering if I'm about to die at the poker table right now.
Because your heart's sort of skipping a beat?
It wasn't like skipping a beat. Cause I've had that happen before. It was like, oh shit, am I about to have a heart attack? I don't know what it was because I never really went to the doctor, but it was something serious. And and it was getting like more and more prevalent. And so that was going on for 2 years. The other growth had been going on for a year. And when I read this book, I said, okay, you know, I don't know if this is real or not, but let's find out. If this book says I can heal it, then let's do it. And I did the little exercise that it said to do with my hand chakras, open them up, and then put them over my heart to open my heart up. Because apparently, as far as the book said, that's where your healing energy comes from, is your heart chakra. And then I would just put my hand on the back of my head and just sit there with it and keep doing the exercise that it said to do. And within 30 days, that growth was completely gone. And I mean, this was like 8 years ago. And so after 30 days, I haven't had a single issue with my heart at all. I mean, I'm saying that shit was happening. That stuff was happening every single day. And I haven't had a single symptom at all since. That growth is gone, never came back, all within 30 days. So at that point, that's when I was like, oh, there's something to this.
Did you have a lot of stress in your life at that point? Were you having a lot of stress in your life at the point where you were having the heart issues?
Not really. I mean, I was living the freest life ever at that point. You know?
Well, the reason I ask that is because I think there's power in, there is power in sort of positive thinking and your body healing itself. And I'm not trying to in any way, like, obviously I know a little bit about chakras, but I do think that there's sometimes people will poo-poo the idea of, you know, heal thyself.
Yeah,
because they don't really know themselves and they don't realize that a lot of the things they do or their environment affects them physically, the physiological effects of stress and all that. So And we're starting to learn a lot more about that. So, but you, so you do this, that must have opened up a floodgate of things for you.
Oh yeah. I dove head first in after that.
Okay. So what's that look like?
That looks like, I wake up the next day not really the next day, but like over that month time, I'm like, there's something to this. So I wasn't like at the time I was building this, this little record studio and making music and stuff. I completely stopped all of that. I stopped everything I was doing, and just devoted my whole entire time to reading, finding books to read more on this, to, meditate more. To, you know, and just the way life was unfolding, I was just discovering things. Like one day, I'm leaving out the house to go to the corner store. And as soon as I turn the corner, the sun's just sitting there. I get caught just looking at it for like 40 seconds to a minute. I'm just looking straight at the sun.
That's not good.
That's what everybody told me. But I'm having this experience with it. And it was a very profound spiritual experience that just occurred. So I ran back to my house to Google to see if anybody else is doing anything like this. And lo and behold, there's like this guy in India has been doing it for years, talks about how to do it properly, you know, where, cause like, it wasn't like high noon where I'm looking at the sun like that, but within the last hour of sunset and the first hour of sunrise, the UV rays are actually below one. So it is safe to look at. So, I mean, maybe only for like 10 seconds or so. At this point, 8 years later, you know, I'll sit and look at it for like 10, 15, 20 minutes sometimes. And I'm talking looking dead at it. Now, I never suggest anyone else to do it, but I do relate what I do and the benefits that I get out of it. And that, you know, this is pretty much universal.
And you've had no issues with your eyes or anything?
Oh, no, I got 20/10 vision. I see things twice as good as the average person.
Holy cow.
So if you're supposed to go blind, then it takes at least 10 years to do. So,
well, what do you attribute that to then? You're obviously seeing that as something metaphysical. That's something on the spiritual plane that's happening.
Yeah. I attribute it to, if you look at the sun at high noon, your eyes are going to be messed up. But, so there are precautions towards that, but over time, overall, as a global society, we kind of lose the fact that there are benefits to looking at it directly, because then that's direct sunlight. You know, the food we eat is secondary solar energy. You know, either the plants are eating the sun through photosynthesis and we eat the plants, or we eat the animals that eat the plants. It's all still, you know, solar energy that we're getting. This is a way to just get it directly. But anybody who wanted to try it out, I would definitely wait until like the sun is all the way at the horizon. Even though I said it's safe the last hour, if you're first starting out, I would do like the last 15 minutes to start and slowly build yourself up, you know, and only do like 10 seconds a day for like the first week, then maybe add 10 more seconds. Then
I could just hear the ophthalmologist in the audience freaking out right now.
But
there's something, and I don't know the veracity of that one way or the other. Yeah. But one thing I like about you is that you don't beat people over the head with what you think anyway. Like there's some people that's like, I'm a vegan and you should be, I can't believe you even look at an animal. Like, you know, you're just like, look, this is what works for me. And if you want to think about it, I appreciate that approach so much more than it's like the ex-smoker that's just like pissed at everybody that smokes. That they're just like, I can't believe you did that. I'm like, you smoked for 20 years. So, so you don't hit people over the head. Like, I mean, you and I have talked a lot.
No, not at all.
But you haven't hit me over the head with it. And I know that you're down with that. I know that you spend a lot of time thinking about it. And I tend to be attracted to, you know, people that think and people that think differently than other people. So I really appreciate that about you. So you're doing this, you're following this path. How do you get to Louisville? What happens?
So I'll get to that in a second. I'll just say real quick, in line with what I was kind of moving into saying, and it's in regards to what you just said. One thing I always tell like my mentees or anybody I talk to or anytime I'm giving talks or anything. So for anybody listening, don't believe a word I say throughout this whole podcast. Don't believe a single word I say, you know, because I don't want anybody to believe me. But if you want, you can find out if things are true for yourself. You know, that's why I don't really beat people over the head, because I don't want you to believe me, because then you're just relying on whether I'm right or wrong. And that's not going to really do anything for you. But maybe just find out whether I'm telling the truth or whether I'm BSing, or just let it go, you know, or rely on belief. But as far as getting to Louisville, I was really just reading a lot of books and watching some different videos and having my own experiences. And actually, to get to that book that taught me about the hand chakras, at the very end, it talked about astral projection. And I'm like, I don't really know about that, you know, and I'm not ready for that. But then it came to a point like 5-6 months later where I felt like I was ready for that. And I went and opened up the book and it said, you know, open up your hand chakras and put them around a glass of water and charge the water positively because your soul's positively charged, your body's negatively charged, and it'll positively charge your body and repel your soul out. And so I was like, okay, let's try it out. Tried it out and it worked. But as I'm like, my feet are lifting out of my body and my waist lifting out of my body and just my upper body still in there. And I start having these questions of, you know what, how am I supposed to get back? Like, okay, I'm actually leaving now, but how do I get back? And I knew, because I read that section of the book twice, and I knew the answer was not in that book, and I didn't have the answer. So I like jumped up real quick and just stayed awake for a couple hours until it wore off because I was kind of scared to have that experience. And I realized I need somebody to teach me these things, or at least someone I know that knows more than me, that can at least, you know, that I can have a conversation with. Because mostly all the people that I know that know more than me are the people who are writing these books or making these videos, and I can't ask either any questions. So this one book that I was reading by this guy, Osho, Book of Secrets, had all these different meditations that were phenomenal. I was like, okay, this guy's got an ashram in India. I can probably sell all my stuff and have enough money to live off for a year, get over there and live for a year and get back. So let me go ahead and do that. So I start Googling like where his place is, and I was thinking about going to start looking at plane tickets and things. But my very first 10 seconds of Googling, the guy died in 1996. So I'm like, you know what? I don't know, man. I guess I'm stuck just rocking with no teacher. And then a week later, a friend of mine who I'd been talking to, he was a Mason. So we would talk about things, but it would just mostly be me sharing my experience. And he would just be like, oh yeah, that's some good stuff, huh? Or me sharing my experience. And he's like, oh shit, tell me more about that. But it was never really any like back and forth kind of conversation. But he came to me and said, hey, I met these two people at this school of metaphysics. It's really in line with what you're talking about. You might want to check it out. So I go over and check it out. And, you know, they were talking about a lot of things that I was studying, and they already had like this structure together. So I was pretty cool with going and learning whatever they had to offer. But they were also talking about dreams and how to interpret dreams. And the first dream that I told the guy, he pretty much laid out everything that was going on with me the day before. And I had just met this guy 10 seconds earlier. So I was like, okay, there's really something to this. Because my whole life, I've always wanted to find out what my dreams meant. I knew they meant something. I wanted to find out what they meant. And I've studied Freudian books, Jung books, Chinese dream interpretation, modern dream interpretation. All of it always felt like I'm trying to put together a puzzle with 10 different puzzle pieces. And so you're never getting a clear picture. And with this guy and with the way I learned at the School of Metaphysics, I mean, it's clear as day. I mean, I'll meet a stranger and they'll share with me a dream, and I'll just tell them what the dream's saying. They'll look at me like I'm some wizard or something. I'm like, no, I don't know nothing about you. Your dream knows about you. And it's like you got a letter from a loved one in Chinese, and I just know how to read Chinese, you know? So when I really found out about that, that's when I was like, okay, I want to get to a part of this school and really understand this stuff. And because of a lot of my prior study and then a lot of my prior understandings with things, I accelerated really quickly. And so then within like 6 months, I was already like teaching the like earlier students. And so then they needed more teachers down here in Louisville. So they asked me if I wanted to come down and teach at the Louisville school. So I did. I moved down here, started teaching. And within a year, I was directing the Louisville branch of the school here, the local branch. And then was just accelerating that way and learning a lot.
So what do you say to the person that's out there right now in the audience that's going, what a bunch of hooey, what a bunch of hocus pocus, right? Or the Christian person is like, he's of the devil, right? I mean, what do you say to that person?
Yeah, I mean, I would say to that person, I mean, as far as like the Christian person saying I'm of the devil, I mean, I would say you aren't really listening to anything I'm saying because I haven't really said anything devilish. You know, I haven't really said any, if you really study the scriptures, you know, I'm saying a lot that's already in there. There's dream interpretation in the scriptures of by regular people that just become characters in the Bible. You know, there's people that look at the sun, like a lot of people talk about Egyptians worship the sun, but that those hieroglyphs aren't them worshiping the sun. It's just them looking at the sun. So all the type of things that I've talked about so far, you know, meditation for me, meditation is really just listen, like the first half of my meditation, first 5 minutes of my meditation is me praying. And the whole rest of my meditation is me listening. So, you know, I mean, that's all just, you know, a lot of people, they pray and then they say amen and then walk away. You know, that's like if I called you up on the phone and said, hey, Brandon, I need your help, man. I got these financial situations. I got these emotional situations. Hey, you think you can help me? And then I hang up. And I don't even spend
any
time.
That's a great example.
Yeah. And I don't spend any time listening to even see what advice you may have for me. You know, I just hang up and go walking off. Well, maybe Brandon will help me. Maybe he won't.
Yeah, I think in the last 5 to 10 years or so, I've become much more interested in the contemplative study. Like just mm-hmm. to spend all your time talking. Like when people pray, it like for me, I part of me just is like, okay, fine, whatever. Say if that makes you feel yeah. better, I'm all down with that. But I don't think God cares if you talk or not. I think yeah. he, she, it really wants us to listen. So I think that for me. The meditative process is very much about the listening. All right. So mm-hmm. in our last few minutes together,
yeah,
this stuff, like you said, this stuff has been going on, the George Floyd stuff and, you know, everything that Breonna Taylor, and you can go on forever and ever and ever about different people of color yeah. that have been abused yeah. by the police. So this isn't anything yeah. new, but I do feel like this time there's something in mm-hmm. the air. And
yeah, absolutely.
What are you doing now? Personally and corporately, around these things that have kicked off over the last 6 months.
Me personally, I'm mostly just having personal conversations with people. You know, because right now there's a lot of people out here talking and things, and you know, a lot of the things that I've been doing is to help cultivate things that I do feel would create change, which is more, honestly, a lot of it really revolves around economy, the Black economy, and creating our own economy, and not really creating our own economy separate from anything, but creating a cultural economy, you know, Black businesses and helping support Black businesses. And, you know, like I have a lot of friends. One thing that I do see different this time around, because I know you mentioned it earlier and I wanted to speak on it, as far as like protests now to protests a couple years ago to protests, you know, 10 years ago and 20 years ago and things, is I see a lot more Caucasian people protesting. And actually, like these days, I see more Caucasians in the crowd than Black people. And one thing that I like to say is that is showing support. But I feel if you want to help show real change, real support, go in, out of your way to support a Black business. You know, and not necessarily like exclusively or anything, but just, you know, help support economically. But either way, we got to make it happen anyways, because once we create a more, a stronger economy within our community, then we will have more control over, you know, the schools, the taxes, what we do with that money, the businesses in the area, and it being our businesses, to where the money stays within the community. And then you have more, just the community itself and its members slowly begin to prosper even more. More real estate ownership occurs. And then with that, you have more control and you're able to create the solutions. Because a lot of the protests and things is mostly, you know, trying to get lawmakers and other people in power to kind of change this system that's in place. And you can't really ask the system that's designed in a certain way to change. It's already designed. So, I mean, you know, the system, people talk about it's a broken system, but I see it's a well-oiled machine and running exactly how it was designed, you know, because it's not developed into this. It's just not yet dissipated a lot of the racist structures that it was founded upon. You know, a lot of things have dissipated, but like police is one thing that hasn't really dissipated, you know. And and, you know, the judicial system and the difference between, like, me and you can do the same crime and we can have the same attorney, even have the same financial resources. And it's still going to be easier, even if we both end up getting off, it'd be a lot easier for you than it would for me. And yeah, like you mentioned, like white privilege and things. And I think one thing that's a little askew with white privilege when people talk about it is they talk as if it's a bad thing. And it's not a bad thing, because the problem isn't that you shouldn't be able to have these advantages. It's just that it shouldn't be exclusive to the white community, you know? So if someone, you know, is committing a crime and they're able to, you know, make, you know, have a benefit of the doubt and allow themselves to make a case and everything is determined from that perspective, that should be afforded to everybody. Not just as soon as I walk into the courtroom, okay, the perspective is different from the very beginning, and it makes it even harder for me to make a case for myself.
But I think the thing that has to change, it has to be the system has to be set up so that if you are following the system and doing it right, you're not kicked to the curb just because you're the wrong color. And I think that's a big, that still is a big problem, is that you're 100% right. Judicial reform, police reform, prison reform, education reform, they all have to take place, but it is a both and. Supporting black businesses is an important and vital thing, but they also have to have the opportunity to be successful if they are successful, right? So that you don't beat them down just because, you know, they didn't, you know, that it was a black person running the business, so that you're going to, you know, because it's not within the white power structure. So I think you're spot on. I think that's the challenge. You know, a lot of people, I said in one show I had, or people throw a Black Lives Matter sign in their yard and they think they've done enough. And I'm like, nope, that's fine. It's fine that you support Black Lives Matter. It is, but that's not enough. Yeah, no, it's an interesting point you make about the system being what the system is. Have you seen in Louisville a change?
I've seen a change in undertone where, you know, like when people talk about reparations, I stand to talk about, you know, creating that for ourselves. You know, like recently, this one brother that I've come across, actually I've been following for 10 years now, he talks about self-administered reparations. I feel that in the city of Louisville, there's kind of a shift towards that, and more, you're gonna start to see over the next year to a lot more black-owned businesses, a lot more like different apps. There's already apps that are coming out that are designed around finding black-owned businesses. I think you'll start to see things like that, to where the money is generated within the community, because then the community can determine, you know, can have the finances to police itself. You know, like you have some suburbs who have their own police, even though they're a part of Louisville Metro, they still have their own police. And so if you can create something like that through having a stronger financial community within that neighborhood, then you can kind of help more determine the relationship of the police and the community members versus being at the mercy of just telling the LMPD, we need a different type of relationship with the police, and just being at the mercy of how they want to go about making any changes, if any, you know. And so I think, you know, there is a big shift that's occurring, and that's the difference with this is because, you know, taking it back to metaphysically, you know, cosmically, all of these changes are inevitable, but it's going to be slow. So you're going to see a lot of the things of like black businesses coming up, and then eventually that's going to create a stronger financial situation within the community, which will allow more opportunities and more control over what's determined on what happens within that community, how that community grows, what changes are happening within that community, and things like that. So I think you'll start to see it over like the next 5-10 years. Maybe.
I feel like you and I need to do a second podcast to talk about how that's actually going to happen, but we don't have time for it today. Tarok, dude, you're the real deal to me. I really love your spirit and the way you think and the way you interact with people. I encourage people to run out and get your book. It's on Amazon. It's called Life Is But a Dream: Understanding Yourself Through Understanding Your Dreams. I kind of want to check it out, because I swear I want to figure out why I'm always fighting in those dreams. It says something about my character. I know it does. But pick it up. Check out your website, which is awakenwithin.us. and, you know, put up some more meditation videos. Get off your butt and get to it, man, because people need to be seeing that stuff. But thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I don't know why I tagged along that night. Ben and Nick were never doing much right. Maybe I just wanted to try to fit and found an unlocked truck that we broke in. Well, I recognize the truck belonged to Tom DeLoach. He was my childhood football coach. Friend of my mama and a decent guy, but I didn't want to seem soft and bare-eyed.